Yeah, this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development, Monday, April 16th, tax day. Let's see, Lori Byerly is here on House Bill 5015, Employment Department, and this is a work session for 5015. And we have Ms. Delaney Crosby and Monica Brown with us today as well. And Vicky Huerta is our Subcommittee Assistant, and so we'll turn some time to Lori Byerly. Lori?
Good afternoon, Chair Butler, members of the Subcommittee. It's been quite some time since we have gone over the Employment Department's budget. So my plan was to spend a little bit of time reviewing the department's programs and budget requests real quickly, then take a little bit of time and go over the performance measure matrix that Senator E. and I have been working with the department on compiling, address any outstanding issues that the committee may have, and then try to go right into work session and start working through the department's budget.
So, okay. Yes, and we are in work session, so we will invite Berlina up and have Berlina go ahead and bring us up to date with regard to the where we've been since February.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Berlina Crosley, and I'm the director for the Oregon Employment Department. As a brief recap, Ms. Byerly asked me, and I will just do a brief synopsis of the major program areas. There is a chart that is being handed out to you that talks about our four major program areas. We combine two in promote employment and develop the workforce, and primarily those are listing job orders for employers and referring job seekers to those employers. We also refer and place unemployment insurance claimants in suitable jobs, and there are some packages that you have in front of you to do more in the way of that. And then we provide local labor market information as well as state labor market to policymakers, employers, and others at the local level. In support the unemployed, that's where we provide wage reemployment income to eligible workers in the communities, and it helps sustain those communities through areas of economic downturns. It also has insurance of keeping available labor force when they are work attached. Let me just explain that a little bit. When a person is laid off through no fault of their own but is on a short layoff with an estimated time to return, those are called job attached. And those individuals, we've run numbers, and between 80 to 85% of those go back to work for that employer in the time that they have been given. And then we also have the tax system where we collect the unemployment insurance revenues to pay benefits, which is the largest amount of our budget in unlimited funds, non-limited funds. Then promote safe quality child care. This is where we license and register child care providers that care for over three children in Oregon, and we also conduct hearings, and as I talked to you earlier when we met, we have a pilot program that has the hearings panels at the placed in the Employment Department for 4 years, and we're just finishing up the first year of that pilot.
Ms. Crosby, if you'll just remind me that the that came out of House Bill 2525, is that
right? It did, Mr. Chair.
And the total funding sources are $21.7 million, and that is at no additional cost. 2525 was to come across, so there was no additional cost for hearings officers.
Yes, you are correct in that it's not supposed to be additional cost. There were between 6 to 8 positions that were put in administratively to support the panel, and they were also a part of that package. It had some program technicians, a personnel person and technical person for IT. But generally speaking, the hearings officers themselves were not increased under this package. And it contained the amounts that were in the budget that they came out of. For example, Department of Human Services in their Adult and Family Services had hearings officers. Those positions were transferred along with the attributable budget, and those were put in the Employment Department.
Support staff amounts to 6 persons, or is it 8 persons? 6 plus IT, is that what that is?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so 6 plus for a total of 8 positions. Thank you.
And then you can see on the next 2 pages a recap of our budget packages, and I don't know if you want us to just briefly go through those. I know you will be covering those in work session, and I can just very quickly run through those if you
would
like.
Would you please?
Mm-hmm. Package 020 was a phase-out program. You're familiar with the Jobs Plus program. We have been reimbursing employers at about $1 million per month. So our 40-plus million-dollar diversion is almost gone. Matter of fact, we scaled back that program pretty substantially in the last few months to not run out of money to the people that we've already committed through contracts. But it phased out that program and reduced our budget by 22 positions and the equivalent expenditure limitation. We also had a one-stop grant from the work from the Department of Labor, Federal Department of Labor, that was 3 years, and that one-stop grant is now eliminated at the end of this biennium, so we are reduced by 3 limited duration position and the equivalent amount of those federal funds. Package 040, this was for mandated caseload and fund shifts. The revenue for the federal funds of our budget to run the unemployment insurance program has been reduced at the federal level and then replaced with that reduction through READ Act. So what this does is shift 44 positions in our budget out of federal funds, and then there's a corresponding increase in some packages, which I'll hit in a few minutes, that shifts those from federal funds to READ Act or other sources. There's also a projected reduction in other fund fees for the child care division for our $282,000, and it shifts that to federal funds. Those Package 112, claimant reemployment, the agency is requesting 22 positions to do a focus on claimants to get them back to work faster and make them less invisible in the front end of their claim. Package 113.
Now that's, and the other funds, resources, that's out of the current...
That's out of supplemental administrative funds.
Supplemental administrative funds. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And
Senator, you is recognized.
And that's federal.
That is a diversion that the Employment Department has where we have interest on the trust fund that's used for benefits. So the amount of interest that we have on that trust fund in Oregon is used for both the unemployment insurance and employment service programs, and that's the funding that we have here. It is not federal funds.
But it's follow-up.
Follow-up, sorry.
So it's interest income from a trust fund?
Dedicated to unemployment insurance and employment service programs. And then package 113, this would be where we would reinstate limited duration positions that were limited last time because we weren't sure that federal funds would continue to materialize. So the legislature gave us LD positions. These are being asked now as permanent positions to continue the follow-up on complaints and on-site reviews that the legislature authorized with legislation last time, and adds 3 positions to continue on-site health and safety reviews and complaint investigations. We right now are investigating 100% of all serious complaints, which we were not able to do before. And those are federal funds from additional federal funds made available. Package 114 would enhance the child care resource and referral. This is also federal funds, and there'd be approximately $2.4 million additional to the local areas, which allows them to do recruitment for additional child care sites. And then also get parents who are looking for child care quicker to those available sites. Package 115, this is tied to Senate Bill 436, which I would like to advise has passed out of the Senate with unanimous support.
Senate Bill, I'm sorry.
Senate Bill 436. It has just been sent to the House now. Has not been scheduled in committee yet, but did pass the Senate. This would allocate on-site health and safety review positions. The way they did it, the legislature did it based on available funding last time, is we're only doing new homes when they register rather than existing homes, and this would basically allow us to do on-site reviews for all child care providers for in-home care. And those are federal funds also. Package 116 is the Fraud Control Fund. We had several years ago, I believe in 1996, we had a Secretary of State audit, and they requested that we seek legislation that would allow us to keep a portion of the amounts that we collect for positions to collect, actually. And so we have done that. It's actually passed, I believe, one session ago. And so we have now funding to add some positions to help us better manage our accounts receivable in the area of fraud. But we also are shifting, if you look at the federal funds where we actually had funding reduced from federal funds of 44 in package 040, in this particular positions, we're asking for 11 of those to be reinstated. These are existing positions doing existing work. So 11 positions would be shifted from federal funds to fraud control funds. These are dedicated for this purpose. And then 4 new positions, 2 of which are revenue agents. One would be an information technology person that would modify our systems to help them better collect, and also a person who is bilingual, which would also help in that area. And that is other funds, which comes from that fraud control fund.
And so the fraud control, even though on policy option package 040 and 050, we've got a federal reduction of $5,255,000, this $2,129,000 comes and I know we're shifting the positions. Where does the $2,130,000 come from?
It comes from a special fraud control fund.
From federal?
No, it's a dedicated fund at the state level for collecting fraud and benefit overpayments.
And that's from the current assessments that fund is built up.
Package 117, House Bill 3141 was a major bill that was passed last session where we came to the emergency board. We're given positions to complete reprogramming of the mainframe for allowing corporations, when they split off of the main corporation, so they can keep their good experience. We have 5 limited duration positions for 6 months to complete that project. It is on schedule and actually a little ahead of schedule, but this is the anticipated 1.25 FTE needed to complete that, and those are federal funds as well. Package 118, Employment Service Contract Services. For many biennium now, we have been given limited duration positions where we do dedicated employment service referrals, placements for other state agencies, primarily Adult and Family Services and Vocational Rehabilitation. And then we also have contracts, research contracts with the Bureau of Labor and Industries and other types of special research projects. We have positions that we then use when we get those contracts. Based on the contracts that we've been told about, we estimate that we would need 41 positions for those, and you can see that the majority of those are other funds coming from other agencies, and then $231,252 from federal funds.
And the other agencies provide those funds on the basis of what kind of contractual arrangement with the department?
We have, what do they call them, performance contracts where we are to place so many people within a certain period of time, or we are supposed to touch, if you will, so many people and expose them to job finding skills, et cetera.
Those are other agencies within the state of Oregon, then?
Sometimes they're private, but local areas, they're local, like workforce development agencies at the local level, but generally they are state agencies. It is primarily, that is our primary work, to do placement and referral, and we have a lot more contact with employers than they do. So they have tended to get more placements from our staff doing them than their own staff doing them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then package 119 is a shift of funds from $86 million plus from where it's being shown in the Adult and Family Services budget. This makes all of the child care grant funds show first in the Employment Department to give the state a better ability to track the dollars going out. Right now it is parceled out through revenue transfers but not shown as hitting one place. And also we are the contract fiscal agent for those funds as they come into the state, so it is my signature that goes, or Tom's signature that goes on that, and it puts the funds where they are currently funded through the federal government. And package 121 is a special READ Act distribution. This one would pay for 33 positions that were removed as part of package 040. These are not new positions. These are existing positions, and it would refund them through the shift that the federal government anticipated when it reduced the federal funds and put them down to the states in a different source.
Okay, so that between 116 and 121, all of the positions, all the 44 positions in 040, 050 are basically absorbed.
Yes, they're refunded, correct.
Thank you.
And then on the next page, package 122, there are child care funds for post-secondary and alcohol and drug treatment individuals. And those, the governor's budget includes $50,000 general fund for the child care for post-secondary, and then a combination of 2.730 for alcohol and drug, and child care for post-secondary.
Is there a required match, Ms. Kelly?
There is a match for some of the child care dollars, but for these funds, there is not. It comes down to us with match money and discretionary, and this is coming from the discretionary side, which means there is not a match requirement. There is, however, a supplantation requirement. In other words, you cannot supplant funds as they come into the state, and there's what they call maintenance of effort, but they are not match dollars. And we have scrubbed our budgets, and we look like we're okay in both of those areas.
Senator Yee is recognized.
Thank you. So is this for college students who have addicted problems, and when they go to residential treatments, they have child care to take care of their children while they are in treatment?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, it is for individuals who are in alcohol and drug treatment that need child care, yes. It does not have to be students. The other piece of that is people who are in secondary education, college, and need child care while they're attending classes, there is an amount that they get, but they do not have to be in drug and alcohol programs to get that.
Follow-up,
Senator.
So this is for both the students who have treatment and the students who go to college.
Could be, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the alcohol and drug could be beyond students, however.
could be for just young mothers in the workplace who have A and D issues, as I understand it, just full-time in the workplace.
They're separate programs.
They're separate programs, correct.
Do you have a breakdown for how much for each?
I had that written on something before from a trade.
Because we get a lot of letters from college students who say we need to have, we need to continue to have this childcare for them when they go to school.
Is that the other portion, is that from 119, package 119? Because 122 appears to be for, it talks about post-secondary.
Mr. Chair, in post-secondary in 122 is $2.28 million, and the drug and alcohol is $450,000.
So, Mr. Chairman, the part for the alcohol and drug treatment is very little.
And I think that that's only a portion.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Monica Brown with the Department of Administrative Services. Within the base budget of within the employment department, they already have some money in alcohol and drug treatment. This is an additional $450,000, so it should bring the total for alcohol and drug treatment to $1.3 million in 2103.
Another question.
Sorry,
so the $2.289 million is to provide child care for the students who go to college.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, yes.
Mm-hmm. Another question.
Hello,
so how does it compare with last biennium? Because they kept telling us it's not enough.
It is a slight increase. Not a lot. We'd like it to be more, but it is an increase.
How much is the increase?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, last year they received approximately $1.9 million, so it's about a 20% increase because they're now up to $2.33 million.
Thank you, Senator Yee. And package 123?
Health services consolidation. We had an agreement with Department of Administrative Services to move our mail equipment and staffing to their mail services area. We have been in transition, moved our equipment first, and this will actually move the positions to them. They've been doing a great job for us. We have been doing that now under an interagency agreement, and now we will make the final shift over there.
Let's see. Monica, did you want to respond on behalf of the Department of Administrative Services at this point? Is that where we're at?
Mr. Chair, we just have one additional change to make since we met last. The Governor's March revised budget came out, and that included one adjustment for Employment Department. There is an additional $6.3 million available in the Child Care and Development Fund, federal dollars, that will carry over from the fiscal year 2001 appropriation from the federal government. We're proposing that be carried forward into 2103 and transferred to Department of Human Services for employment-related daycare.
That's currently available in the 9901 budget, and it will remain unexpended.
Mr. Chair, it was not appropriated. It came through in the federal fiscal year 2001 appropriation, so it's not currently in the 99-2001 biennium budget, but the resources are available. They haven't been appropriated, so we're proposing
to expend it now is what you're saying.
If you authorize additional limitation to do that, yes, you, Mr. Chair.
And the purpose for that is for, I'm sorry, specifically for child care?
Yes, it is part of the Child Care and Development Fund from the federal grant.
So the $64 question then is at that particular point at the $6.3 million, mm-hmm. which is a carryover from the 9901 as a result of the fact that that's new federal fund and their odd, or they're different by annual year, that's additional money that basically augments package 119 at present. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
119 is Federal Child Care Development Fund.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
So that would, that basically augments the 86.5 million. Okay. And maintenance of effort issue there, or are those funds, they're mandatory that they go for just that specific purpose for the Child Care and Development Fund? Development issues.
Mr. Chair, these are additional discretionary dollars, but we have, as it relates to the entire block grant, we have looked at the entire budget, and we believe that the maintenance of effort and matching and the supplantation issues have been addressed, and we should be fine.
And nothing has to be expended by June 30 of this year of that, of the additional $6.3 million in order to meet those requirements. Thank you very much. Ms. Varley.
If you look at the last page of the handout from the Employment Department, I believe you will see the latest version of the Performance Measures Matrix. The department has been working with Senator Yee and myself to come up with a one-page snapshot of the performance measures, and I'd like to just real briefly go down the measures.
Well, I just want to say I met with the department and Lori four meetings to bring the goals down. See, they have eight goals, and we bring it down to three primary goals: in promote employment, support the unemployed, and child care. I think three primary goals should be enough for us to measure the performance. And they have 27 performance measures, and we bring it to about nine. And I think put it in one-page summary would be much easier for us to look at their performance. And if you want some detail, look at the best page for the source of data and methodology. I think that's about all the committee wants. But if the committee wants more,
you've done an excellent,
we can put in more.
Excellent job with the subcommittee of one, Senator. We appreciate you. And we're going to count the work which you have accomplished here as being finalized, and you're hereby released as the committee of one with regard to the Department of Employment's performance objectives and measurements. Thank you very much, Senator Yee.
And we're going to ask Lori to go over the details.
Okay, Lori, you want to help us through?
Yes, sure, but listen to me. I'll run through these real briefly. The first measure we see at the very top under performance measure is placements into jobs. This measure is simply to look at the numbers of placements the employment department does for pure getting people placed into a position. There's some other measurements the employment department uses to count activities assisting people get jobs. This is just kind of the little tip of the iceberg in terms of actually getting somebody into jobs. You'll see there's some historical data as well as current data and some projections for the next 3 years. The next performance measure is the annual worker wage placement, and this reflects for those placements in the first measure what the average wage is for those individuals receiving jobs. And once again, you'll see some historical data as well as some projections for future dollars. The next performance measure is for job retention. This measures for those people placed what percentage of them maintain and stayed in the job for 4 quarters. So you'll see that percentage. That seems to be increasing. The current year data will not be available until July of 2001, simply because we have to wait for that four-quarter time frame to pass before we can count those individuals. The next major...
Maybe some legislators will be back on the payroll by July of 2001, too, we hope.
The next measurement measures how much it costs to place those individuals. This is... It takes data from the department's accounting system and matches that up with the number of placements they complete, and that's the figure you get. You'll see over time that that cost has increased, like everything else. The next measurement is in the support the unemployed area, which is the unemployment insurance activities of the department. The first measurement is the number of benefits paid within 14 days. This is kind of the federal guideline for getting payments out to individuals. And you'll see the department is maintaining a pretty high level of 95% or above in keeping those benefit payments made within that time frame. The next measurement is the cost per claim. This is what it costs the department to process one of those unemployment insurance claims. The next measurement is called accuracy of UI hearings. This measurement looks specifically at hearing outcomes. For those hearings that have appeals requested, this reflects the percentage of appeals that were upheld for the department. So it kind of gives you a flavor of what the outcome of those appealed hearings are. Of course, there's quite a few hearings that aren't appealed out there that this isn't really looking at, but this kind of gives a slice of the accuracy in terms of the outcome of the hearing as opposed to a process measure. The next measurement is timeliness of UI hearings. This shows the percentage of hearings that are completed with a time frame, and I can't remember off the top of my head, so I'll refer to the footnote. Time frame is within 30 days. So the goal, so it's 60% of their measurements within 30 days. And they've got those projected to be at 70% or above in the future, and they're currently running a little bit lower than they have in the past, and I believe this is due primarily to some turnover in the department and getting people back up on board and up to speed to process those hearings. The next measurement shows the number of hearings that are successful for the employment department. Hearings can be in favor of the former employee, in favor of the employer, or in favor of the department, and this measures the number of hearings where the employment department came out successful in the outcome of that hearing. The next measurement is the cost per hearing. This measures how expensive that hearing process cost is for the department as it counts the expenses of those program areas versus the number of hearings that are actually processed. The bottom area is child care. There's not a lot of statistics available currently on various aspects of child care, but two current measurements that are Oregon benchmarks under the Oregon Progress Board is affordability and availability. The affordability measurement counts the percentage of families who spend less than 10% of their income on child care. The goal is for them to be spending under that amount. And you'll see in 1998 that 67% of families were spending less than 10%, and in the year 2000, 64% of families were spending less than 10%. This data is obtained via survey, so it's not something that's gathered every year. So that's why there's a lag in certain years where there's no data available. And right below that, I'll show you what the average annual wage is, so it gives you a sense for what that 10% limit might be. The availability benchmark measures the number of slots that are available for children of age 13. The goal is to have 25 slots per 100 children. This shows that as we go along, that the slots have increased, and that there is a projection out there that at some point we'll meet that goal. The last two measurements that are in the gray area.
Something with the availability of slots for 100 children. That's places to place children,
mm-hmm.
so that you have 21. And your goal is to have 25 available open slots
mm-hmm.
to place 100 children.
And that, well, out of every 100 children who are younger than age 13, you want 25 slots. So some of those children probably wouldn't need a child care slot.
I see.
So it's kind of a broad measurement in terms of, and it probably would be nice if there was some data that would reflect like how many kids under age 6 needed slots, but the current statistics are for that 13 and below age frame. The last two measures that are shaded are prospective measures that would be counted, that have been looked at before and would be looked at again in the future. And these are based off survey information where parents were surveyed and they felt like their children were safe in their child care situation and they felt like their children were receiving quality care. And you'll see those percentages there. And there will be more data available the next time the survey is completed.
Thank you. Are there any questions of members of the committee? That's detailed information. Yes, Senator Yee.
I just wanted to point out in the hearings, the timeliness of UI hearings in year 2000, it dropped to only 60% are timely, and they hope to go back to 70% in 01 and in the future. And the reason for the drop, it says in the footnote 8, is because of many retirements of the hearing officers. And they hope to gain back the momentum once the new hearing officers are trained. I just want to say, Lori and I met last Friday afternoon for an hour to go over this. So I want to thank Lori for her hard work and dedication. So I think next session it will be very easy to do these performance measures once we do it together.
She said, no, she's a rotation analyst. She's not going to be here next session. Neither will I. So she promised she would train the next one before she leaves.
And they would step and rotate back to this committee.
And yes, we want her not to rotate.
Well, and Chair Butler, Senator, I'm sure the department will not forget that we've worked on this matter.
President Ringo is recognized.
Thank you. Senator, if I'm here next session, I will remember these performance measures. Okay?
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Yee has just raised the bar on what a one-member subcommittee can do.
Oh, boy. This is great, and that's the only statistic, just the timeliness of the time of hearings, really appears to be much out of kilter at that point, and that's been explained as a result of your retirement as an ALJ administrative officer.
Well, the department does a good job in compiling all these performance measures. I think they're required by federal requirements to do it. But I'm happy we can summarize it into only 3 goals and 9 measures instead of 8 goals and 22 measures.
Thank you very much, Senator Yee. Now, relative to the overview of what's actually happening today and where we're at now, we've got a number of activities. Not the least of which, we've got some questions, and were we going to go through the questions that were, let's see, those were the March 19th responses.
Chair Butler, those were some additional questions the department had provided the committee after we met last.
Okay. All right. And are there any follow-up or questions with regard to those responses back from a month ago, nearly a month ago? My understanding as we go into work, as we continue the work session, that there are at least 3 or 4 pieces of legislation that continue to depend upon what we do relative to a number of issues, not the least of which is the Jobs Plus legislation, which is outstanding. We have 1 bill addressing substantive changes and 2 bills which actually address the funding of Jobs Plus unemployment insurance. Senate Bill 874. House Bill 3441, House Bill 2959, and then there are some issues in the Department of Human Resources and Welfare, and then we're considering House Bill 5015, and we need to accommodate what may take place. Can you maybe give us a flavor, Lori, of how we're going to do that, what may take place in House Bill 5015? For the administration of the positions that may take place or may be modified as a result of the 1 Senate bill and 2 House bills, any modification in the Department of Human Services, too.
Chair Butler, members of the subcommittee, it's my understanding that some of the substantive changes that are in those bills, as well as some of the funding pieces, are still being discussed by proponents of those bills in the department. As far as the budget at this point in time, it was my intent to recommend that we simply comment that there is pending legislation out there, and if there is not funding and administrative positions attached to that legislation as it works its way through the process, that the department will probably have to come to the emergency board and discuss the needs relative to that, to those facts, to any of the possible policy changes, and deal with the funding issues at that point in time.
So basically, that basically we're saying then, If we leave that to the emergency board, then that says none of the 3 packages or 3 bills that are outstanding in the center of the House would pass. Is that what we would contemplate then?
Chair Butler, that would not be my understanding. Frequently, and I think the department has experienced this before, there will be a bill working its way through the legislature that creates a new program, but the positions required and the funding required for the department to meet that need will be attached to that bill.
So when and if it does pass, then the position authority would be granted by the, it's assumed that the position authority would be granted by the emergency board. In the interim, following the passage and signing into law of that bill?
Well, the funding of positions could be actually attached to the bill if it works its way through a Ways and Means process. Or in the event that no funding was attached, that would be the point at which the department would have to come forward and say, this is what we think we would have to put in place to run the program, and this is what we would need. And at that time, they could examine their internal resources and see if they had anything available to support that, and also make any requests of the emergency board in terms of limitation.
I think Ms. Crosley probably is testifying, or staff is testifying, on all three of the subject bills. Perhaps it would be appropriate for Verlina to go ahead and give us some flavor of where we're at on those. So could you do that, Verlina?
Mr. Chair and members, I have provided the testimony at the substantive committee on Senate Bill 876. It is
874.
Excuse me. Okay. 874 basically would make some fairly major changes to the Jobs Plus program. Two of those, for example, would be that right now employers are reimbursed at $6.50 per hour. The bill would reduce it to $5 per hour, and it also is allowed currently to have a Jobs Plus position subsidized for 6 months. The bill would reduce it to 13 weeks, about half that time. The primary reason to do that is to make the cost-benefit analysis more in favor of the program, because it the users of the program from the job seeker side have been primarily at the lower end of the wages, and typically they get quite a bit more on a Jobs Plus position than they do out of the unemployment trust fund through unemployment insurance benefits. So it's to put those more in sync. That's what the sponsors are trying to do. There are also some changes that have raised conformity issues. Two of those are, one deals with suitability, that a job has to be suitable. The bill would allow the employment department director to ignore suitability for purposes of Jobs Plus. The federal government and the governor have raised issues regarding that. And these proponents of the bill have indicated that they are willing to delete that, given the concerns expressed. And there's also another one that would count the time in a Jobs Plus job as part of the time a person would qualify for unemployment insurance benefits. For example, if you were in a Jobs Plus job for 13 weeks, you would only be eligible to claim 13 weeks additional for unemployment insurance benefits. And again, the federal government wrote us a conformity letter that said if we pass that, they would consider that reducing the time on a claim, which is not allowed by a state program. For both of those reasons, the proponents have made some changes, and I have not seen drafted language, but they have indicated they will be drafted language to bring those things in agreement with the federal letter.
Not only advocate on behalf of bringing them as in the uniformity with the federal law, but at that point you could be a proponent of that. Okay, thank you.
So I think, Mr. Chair, we are very close. If these, there's a few additional ones, but not as substantive as those, that we are very close on the substantive bill in getting agreement between the governor's office, the department, and the proponents and sponsors on the Senate side. The funding issue is yet further apart. The governor is very concerned that the Jobs Plus program, which historically has taken the administrative parts of the budget for that program from the diversion itself. In other words, that it's not an unfunded mandate, or that it competes against funding for other types of services. And so that is part of the discussion about where the funding should come from. And then the other question is how large should the diversion be, and whether it does or does not trigger a tax increase. Those numbers that, and I just talked to Mark Gibson minutes before I came to this meeting, we believe that we can serve without triggering a tax increase, and that's with Senate Bill 397, our own bill that decreases tax rates that passed the Senate within the last couple of weeks. With both bills passing, in other words, a Jobs Plus diversion and Senate Bill 397, which of course employers want, we are saying that we believe we can serve 750 individuals a year on Jobs Plus. The individual proponents would like us to serve 4,000 per year. And the diversions that are needed are being discussed related to those numbers.
Sounds like you're a long ways apart relative to the funding at that point. 750 is quite a raise from 4,000. Representative Johnson is recognized.
I was just going to follow up on that, Mr. Chair. It appears that, if I'm reading the material right, you need 22 people inside the department to service 750?
No, we would have to reduce that, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson. We're right now using around an average of 22 positions, and we're doing between 3,200 to 3,500 placements per year currently.
I don't understand why these numbers are all so hugely far apart. You're saying you can only sponsor 750, but you're doing 3,200 now.
The assumptions, okay, what the proponents have done is assumed durations on claims, on the claim, much different than experience has shown us to anticipate. We have taken their model and rerun it based on experience, and now we have 4 years of very good experience based on the types of job orders that we get and the placements that are made. And based on our real experience versus projected wishes, I guess, or wants, we believe that with the funding available, we can only serve the 750. In other words, for example, the proponents are indicating that they believe there would be an average duration on Jobs Plus of 4 weeks before you get into a Jobs Plus job. Our experience has shown us that it takes about 10.6 average weeks to get an individual into those. They also have an assumption that 31% return back on unemployment insurance. Our experience shows about 40% return for an overall average of 7.1 weeks. They assumed 5.2 weeks. So you can see that the assumptions are quite a bit different.
But still, the piece I don't get is, with 22 people, you're doing 32 placements right now. And you want to drop it down to 750?
750 claimants being placed in a Jobs Plus job, correct.
Let me make sure. Now what you just asked me causes me to believe maybe I don't have the nomenclature correctly. What do you call the 3,200 you're placing right now?
Those are people that we actually place in a Jobs Plus job. Not the amount of people we refer or the jobs we developed, but those are the amount of people that we actually place in a job.
Ms. Crosby, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but you're making me drag this out of you, and I'm not asking the right question, but you're not helping me very much either, so help me.
What is the question?
Who are the 750? How do you, that you want to be able to do? How would you characterize them? What would they be called?
Maybe the people that we would place, the same as the 3,200, just a reduction.
That reduction, so that I understand, that reduction would be as a result of the reduction in the diversion from the present unemployment insurance current filings.
Correct. That $40 million diversion with no estimation of savings on a trust fund or the amount of time that they would be in a job or any of those things. We had $40 million that we had to reimburse employers. We also were given 22 positions in which to do the work around that body of work. But what I'm saying is, based on the amount of diversions that we believe would not trigger a tax increase, which would be about $2.5 million per year or a $5 million biennial diversion, we believe that we can serve about 750 people based on our experience.
So let me see if I recall some of the testimony relative to that, if I may, please, Ms. Crosley. As I recall, we actually set aside $40 million from the trust fund itself, or from some portion of it that moved back in, which amount of money was available to assist us over the past, like, 3 years, I think.
About four.
4 years, okay, to actually sustain the placement at the 3,200 to 3,500 placements per year. But in order to, but the amount of freeboard, if you will, that we have presently in the UI payments, the current unemployment insurance payments, without any tax increase, is $2.5 million. That 2.5, and I think we've got some small amount of carryover of the $40 million still left as well, but that freeboard of 2.5 plus the carryover would only sustain about 750 placements. If we were to try and maintain a 3,200 to 3,500, or even go to 4,000 placements per year, we would have to do one of two things. We would have to increase the amount of unemployment insurance rate, or have some other ability to reach in like we've done before and pull excess funds from the unemployment insurance trust. And the complication, if I recall, again, stop me when I'm way over the edge or before I get way too close to the edge.
We'll throw you a rope.
Thank you very much, Representative Patrick. Most of the ropes have been thrown have rocks on them. But my recollection is that what happens is that right now, you would have to, you could sustain the 750, but we'd have to have some special dispensation to use additional funds because of the current labor and job market, number of actual other claims that may endanger the actual reaching into the 40, or reaching in to the location of the trust fund where the $40 million had previously come out.
I think you have that pretty much. Senate Bill 397, the bill that would lower the tax rate, if you pulled that off the table and that didn't pass, for example, you'd have somewhere like around 20-some million to play with. But with that
per passage, year?
I think it's race gone, but I think that may be a biennial.
And that's House Bill which?
It's Senate Bill 397.
397. And where is 397?
It's passed the Senate.
And that lowers the rate.
And then that leaves only a smaller number.
Then your $2.5 million is even in question at that point.
$2.5 million is pretty firm.
Is the amount after if 397 were to take
correct
effect. Okay. And the support for Senate Bill 397, pretty broad?
The Senate side, labor filed a minority report, the people who represented the labor area, but it did pass out. The minority report failed, and about half of the people who voted for the minority report voted for the bill.
For the reduction in the unemployment insurance rate. It's not the first time I've caught with the Senate bill zooming in and landing on my head. Thank you very much. What is the reduction of that rate presently, Ms. Crosley?
Mr. Chair, it actually affects three schedules.
I see.
And I don't have the actual rate reduction total with me. I didn't bring that. I'm sorry. But it, without the reduction rate, in 2003, the majority of small employers would have about a 50% increase when they would go from one schedule to another. and we talk about a reverse cliff effect. We just now reduced by $90 some million when we moved from schedule 3 to 2. And in 2003, we're expecting to go up to 3 again. If they go up to 3, that is a large increase, and we're over-recovering right now the balance of the trust fund, primarily because it's so large and the economy's been quite good that the interest has been very good. So we are trying to smooth those out when employers go back up to in 2003.
Now help me with one other item, if you would, please. And I think Representative Johnson had a line of questioning, and I don't want to get too far ahead of the cart at this point, but the funding resource or the funding stream. And I can appreciate the reticence on the part of the governor to want to use any of the master trust for any of these kinds of things in the economic environment in which we live today. But the governor's position relative to the funding at the 2.5 million passage of Senate Bill 397 assured, then. Governor has no problem at 750 placements per year of Jobs Plus, but if 397 does not pass and we have a much more significant amount available without the adjustment of the three UI schedules, then at that particular point we're really looking at the would the governor be in an opposition to it at that point at that level?
I have not asked him that. Obviously, he does know that there are two bills, one that's going forward that has passed, you know, out of the Senate. As I understand it, in the meetings that I've been with him and the proponents, he's basically said if the dollars can be found available and there is an agreement to the assumptions with those, that he has nothing against the program, it's just that he needs to have it funded.
Assurance that the funding is secure without lunging out in this overall program. Well, I appreciate that explanation, because that's, I now know more about what's going on as a result of this. I guess that is of concern, and that's where we would have to be in order to make certain that we can fund the Jobs Plus at any level above 750. And obviously those people who favor the Jobs Plus would like to have more than 750 placements a year. I certainly have had rather substantial emails from constituents indicating that they've had excellent placements and follow-up positions landed by folks who had come into the job market and were, for whatever reason, really not your typical unemployed person, but not really ready for the job market, came through the Jobs Plus and now have not just good family wage jobs, but leadership in some cases, because they were able to identify and give them some degree of confidence in themselves as they went forward. Now, I'm sure that there's other sides of that, or people that fell back off the wagon too, but at any rate, I didn't get the email regarding those. Senator Yee is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to take too much committee's time, but I want to know how much does it take to fund 3,200 jobs, and what will be the funding source?
The funding source that we've used for Jobs Plus has been a diversion, and it was for the reimbursement for the subsidy to employers, as well as the administration of the program. And a diversion is the amount that employers pay in taxes, and a certain portion of it is reserved. It's like a surtax. A certain portion of it would be reserved before it would go into the trust fund, because once it's in the trust fund, it can only be used for payment of unemployment insurance or anything.
But how much, by the way, how much would it take
And is it going to increase employers' rate to do it?
For which number?
For the 3,200 jobs.
The assumption is that we would take $11.3 million per year.
And is it going to increase the employers' rate?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, but that's for 4,000. I don't have it. That's the assumption that the proponents are using is the 4,000. So it would be close
4,000
to
4,000 jobs.
4,000 placements of participants in jobs plus jobs. That amount would be $11.3 million. And we're saying in the Employment Department and the Governor's Office is saying at that amount, we would increase taxes.
Another question.
Follow up, mm-hmm. Senator.
So, what is the rate now, and what would it be to fund $11.3 million per year?
I don't have all of that with me, but to go from Schedule 2 to Schedule 3 at the it's about a 22% increase to go from Schedule 3 to Schedule 4, and about that from Schedule 2 to Schedule 3.
22% increase from what rate is it now?
Well, the rate right now, we're in Schedule 2, so it's 1.75, but those are average rates. You don't really know a rate for an individual employer without knowing what their experience is. So that's an average rate across all employers is 1.75. We're in Schedule 2. And if we have to go to Schedule 3, then at current rates without Senate Bill 397, actually it go from 1.75 to 2.09. With Schedule 397, excuse me, Senate Bill 397, we go from 1.75 to 1.99.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, Senator.
I thought Senate Bill 397 will lower rates. When you go from 1.75 to 1.99, that's an increase.
Well, this, if you remember this chart, it's really hard because I didn't know we were going to actually get into this, but there are 8 schedules, and all of them increase taxes. On the one side, they decrease taxes on the other side. But if you move up from Schedule 2 to Schedule 3, you're in effect increasing taxes. Okay? What Senate Bill 397 does, says is if you move to a new schedule, the amount that you would increase taxes would be less because we're changing the rate that you would in that schedule, the rates in that schedule. So instead of going to an average rate of 1.99 in Schedule 3, without Senate Bill 397, we would go to 2.09.
I see. So it's less of an increase.
It's less of an increase.
That's right.
It's called the reverse cliff effect. We're trying to make that jump higher, less high.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It is hard to explain.
Mm-hmm. Reverse cliff effect is taking Representative Zahner and holding him up by his feet off the desk. That's a reverse cliff.
That's good.
That's the only thing I could think of what a reverse cliff was, just increasing at a decreasing rate, using the old economics formula. Well, the concern is that I see at this particular point is that there has been an expression made, and I would appreciate any discussion within the committee, has been an expression made that because of, and I don't know, Representative Patridge, I know you've had email on these issues. Representative Ringel, have you had anything on Jobs Plus, any of your constituents?
No, I have not heard any mention of Jobs Plus except outside of this committee.
Outside of this committee. So you're not getting any mail hot one way or the other.
Sorry. But Mr. Chair, I would be curious to know about the mail others have received, and you mentioned it.
Well, I guess I come from a little bit different background also, because I've seen it work in, well, historically, and here's where I'll really get, you know, trying to remember something. And historically, a number of years ago, I think Governor Roberts may have been the governor at the time, people in the state of Oregon said we ought to go to job fair as opposed to welfare. In other words, put people to work. And there was at that time there was a set up of some money that was diverted out of the master program. It appeared to be that there was enough in the master trust that you could move some money. Actually, it came down to the point where there was almost a lawsuit against the governor to enforce the meaning of the people voted on workfare, and it was overwhelmingly passed. What happened was, I think they selected the six counties in which this had passed with the greatest margin, passed statewide, but they took six counties that had passed with the greatest margin. One of those counties happened to be the county that I was a county commissioner in, and they implemented the Jobs Plus program. We have one, in my county, we have one office of the Department of Employment. And so what happened was that there was immediately dozens of jobs available. First of all, an opportunity for the people to get back in, make sure they have job skills, get them to work as fast as they possibly could, no matter what the type of work. They may have been a bricklayer before, or whatever, it didn't matter. But the first opportunity to work that came along, it got them into the workplace very rapidly. And then with some training and some other there was actually welfare benefits under that program. We got some waivers from the federal government where welfare benefits were actually converted into, away from the welfare food stamps and other kinds of things, actually into the workplace, so that that person could actually pay for food with cash and do those other kinds of things, budget for themselves and meet lots of other obligations. Lots of job skills and real life skills were taught in that process. And it brought successfully in the county in which I reside, it brought 50 or 60 people, and I don't know how many there were, fairly immediately into, within a matter of a number of turns, revolutions within the overall program. As a group would come through, there'd be a group immediately following them, and they would come out and look, be available for jobs. And it was an excellent, excellent opportunity for employers, including, and this is a caveat, including the public sector employers. Some of the places where they were used were the new jobs that were opening up for regional strategies and economic development and those kinds of things, where they would come in and be a secretary or be an assistant, and then you'd have them for 3 months in that particular position, and then pretty quickly they weren't even employed in the state. They'd jump over to Micron in Boise, and they were on the bus every morning or every 8 hours back and forth to Micron or Hewlett Packard. One took a position. I know that one did take a position in a very lead position with Hewlett Packard in Nampa, in Nampa, Idaho, within a matter of about 6 months was in a high level management trainee position. You know, we're talking $60,000, and
but are you still getting letters from constituents on this?
I still am. Those people who would like to see that program continue with the same gusto and viability. Okay. However, our market has changed. I say our market has changed. The dynamics of the unemployment trust, the master trust, has changed with the pressure. And I may have this wrong, but the economic theory is, with the pressure on the master trust to say, whoa, wait a minute, don't use any of the excesses for any of these kinds of programs that would bring those marginally employed or unemployed back into the labor market. Hold your master trust intact without tapping it for anything. Keep in your policy packages, you can use a little of the interest here or a little of that there, but maintain that as close as possible as intact, because the dynamics of the workplace are changing very rapidly with the potential down or potential decline in the overall workplace. And so I think there's some reticence again to go in and do any of these other kinds of manipulations and gyrations that have generated good employment opportunities in the past, that curve may have passed us if we are in a downward trend in the overall marketplace. So that's kind of the way, and I hope that I've explained that correctly, but that's part of, that may be too simplistic. It obviously is way too simplistic. But
carry that most of it right.
Okay. Well, I think that's where we're kind of coming from, is that there are those in the field out there that would like to say, maintain any way that you possibly can that Jobs Plus program so that you keep 4,000 people introduced back into the workplace on an annual basis. And Ms. Crosley and the department basically says, even with a scale back in the current House bill of 5015, even the scale back from 22 people that are needed to run the program at 32 to 3,500 placements per year, if you scale that back to 5 people so that you could handle 750 placements, 700 to 750 placements, then that's all that you'd have the resources to do just out of the diversion of the current employment, and that's even with the passage of Senate Bill 397. You'd still only just have enough to run 750 jobs and the few employees within the department that it would take to run that. So I think that's kind of where we're at today, and I guess I would seek anyone else who has had input relative. Senator Yee, have you had?
I've heard from employers and from workers that they support the Job Plus program. So I think even if it means increase in employers' rates, I don't know how employers feel, but I do hear from them and from the workers. They support this program.
But with Senate Bill 397 having passed the Senate, which would be in effect a reduction in the rates or a reduction of the increase in the rates,
mm-hmm.
then what we have is we have basically some appetite for a reduction in the overall funds that would be available
mm-hmm.
for an expanded, but for a program to level at 4,000 per year. Is that your understanding?
That's 700 per year.
Right now, there would only be sufficient for about 750 per year.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Clarno, have you had the email? We're just visiting email or other constituent mail regarding Jobs Plus, the viability of Jobs Plus in your district, in your Senate.
We've had letters supporting the Jobs Plus program. And I would just say that in the 4 years I was out of this building, I worked where there was a Jobs Plus recipient, and she gained a tremendous amount of skills on the job and was very thrilled to be able to have the on-the-ground working experience to increase her skills.
And then went on and
another job.
Okay, excellent. And it isn't necessarily for the long-term job. In other words, working as a staff person for the OECDD or the local rep for the employment for the Economic Development Commission, you know, or for the county's Economic Development Department, that was just to introduce them to the workplace, and then they would go from there. Really, what you do in that case is you want your very best and brightest to go on. Your success ratio is in how many employees you lose, because you're just training them to move through the. Representative Patridge, have you had exposure to this point?
Quite a bit of exposure at this point. And several of the House bills are bills that I'm the sponsor on, because people came to me from the community to ask me to do that. Talk to my chamber and other people, but I know that there's some complications. The director's got me very up to date, and I've appreciated that. And she can give you a whole crosswalk and walk through, and I think it's pretty helpful. And I'd encourage you to sit down with her and the proponents of the bill as well. You know, I'm not leading the charge down the thing on this one. There are brighter minds than mine, most definitely out there, who are working on this thing predominantly. But I've heard from employers. I've heard from a lot of employers and several recipients of Job Plus dollars, I think. know several people who've been able to get into a job because they came through the jobs class.
One thing that I have heard is that they were concerned that at least one of the bills didn't address just the jobs plus portion.
Right.
That they were shipping away some portion away from the department, and I assured them that no, that the Department of Employment was exactly where we wanted it to remain. That was my understanding of your bills. I looked into legislative fiscal as to how we would resolve this issue as we go into it, as we work in the current House Bill 5015 for the Employment Department.
Chair Butler, members of the subcommittee, since at this time it is very unclear what the capacity of the program will be, or what the required staffing levels will be, or the funding and/or the funding source. And my proposal is simply this time to put some kind of budget note in the agency's budget. And here's an example of what I've drafted. The subcommittee noted that pending Jobs Plus legislation may have an impact on the agency's budget. The subcommittee directed the agency to return to the emergency board during the interim to request positions and related funding if a consensus around the many Jobs Plus policy issues can be reached during the 2001 legislative session. We could expand that somewhat. It would be my hope that if the legislation came through the process, that the administrative funding piece would be part of that. And it's my understanding that if it's not, then that does create a problem for the department.
Representative Patrick, you had some related legislation there that has been discussed. Would you want to take a moment at this time and discuss any of that?
Oh, outside of Jobs Plus?
This is all outside of Jobs Plus?
Yeah, this is all outside of Jobs Plus.
Okay.
Resolve the Jobs Plus.
Well, we really need to resolve the Jobs Plus, and I think that as we presently stand, there's some unanimity of opinion that I don't think even Representative Ringo is opposed to. And Senator, Representative, you can't go anywhere. We're in a work session. We've got to have three members here.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We've got language which has been presented by Ms. Byerly from Legislative Fiscal Office to acknowledge that Jobs Plus is a potential, but at what level we know not. So. I personally would like to see that language beefed up. I think that there is a great appetite being expressed by this committee that the Jobs Plus continue forward with a very positive motion, and that the director has indicated her willingness to strive to work, you know, within the executive branch and with the legislature to see that is successful, but also recognizing the will of the legislators as they may pass reductions in tax rates and those kinds of things. So I think the ones that we have identified, two Senate bills, 874 and 397, and two House bills, 3441 and 2959, for Jobs Plus and short-term, long-term funding issues, and improvements in the program, as well as some tax rate issues, are presently in process. So, with that, if we can enhance that language, do I have a motion that we go ahead and adopt that budget language?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Does AOI support this?
It's my understanding that AOI does
support funding for the 2,000 or 4,000 increase in jobs.
Ms. Crosland.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, my understanding is that they sent a letter to Senator Dirtler, and they also called me because they had a no diversion letter to the members. And it's my understanding that they are concerned about tax, triggering a tax increase. But if there can be a way found to have a diversion at some level that doesn't do that, then they are supportive of a diversion for Jobs Plus.
Mr. Chairman, They're concerned with, did you say 3 million increase? What is the amount you said?
Their increase to what?
Increase
in
rates?
In rates.
Mm-hmm. The 22% increase.
In yes. Their letter to Senator Dirksler, as I understand it, and I haven't seen a copy, but they read it to me. It was that they could support $11 million diversion per year if there could be savings to the program, unemployment insurance program trust fund, that would not trigger a tax rate, which in their assumptions, they would still try to get to that $2.5 million. They get it from $11 million with $8.5 million, I believe, around that savings to the trust fund based on Jobs Plus. It is those assumptions in the model that we're running that the proponents have used that we're not in agreement with. There's a lot of parties, as you can imagine, discussing this.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
So there's a qualified support, I guess.
So they support it because even with the rate increase, they're going to see a reduction in unemployment claims.
Representative Patrick may have.
And therefore be neutral.
Yeah, let's see if Representative Patrick can shed some light on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I've talked to AOI, I've talked to the proponents, I've talked to the director of the department. I think that probably AOI and the proponents necessarily of the bill are close to some kind of agreement, and the department has been involved in those things. They had a meeting last Thursday regarding this. I think that some of the concern is the agreement on what the baseline assumptions are, and I think the department has some conclusions about what they believe the baseline is and what's going to occur, and the proponents have their assumptions, and then AOI is kind of in the middle trying to balance out the assumptions. But I think that this is a dynamic process. I know that the debate has been thoughtful about that. I think AOI is generally okay with the concept as long as it doesn't adversely affect their membership, and they need to look at the baseline. So I've talked with all three of the parties, and I think that I guess I don't think that anyone necessarily has a large problem with this, unless the department does with the budget note. I mean, the budget note just basically says they're directed to come back if these bills pass and do the things that need to get done, and I think that that's appropriate based upon, you know, we have to move these budgets until it's appropriate based upon the baseline of what's going on. And I know that the debate and talks will continue.
Representative Patrick then moves the budget note into the budget. Is there any objection? We're in work session. If there is no objection, we'll order the budget note into the House Bill 5015. Ms. Byerly, we're down to within just a few minutes before we need to be, and we've got Representative Johnson, who's been an ad hoc committee with I think one other member to assist us with the OECD rules that when we hear that budget. So
it looks like Chair Butler, members of the committee, it looks like at this point with 5 minutes left, how long did you plan the committee going today?
Probably 4 or 5 hours, but nobody will be here but you at that point.
unless the committee is willing to dive right into work session recommendations at this point, my preference would be to address the issues that Representative Patrick has and get that out of the way, and then we can come back and maybe think we could come back and wrap up work sessions. I think we have the Jobs Plus thing involved for now.
Can we close the work session then on
I will do these briefly. Let me get these to read. I gave you these already. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for your indulgence on these. I brought copies of two bills, both of which I am the chief sponsor on, but we're working on these bills, and since I'm on the budget committee, I wanted to get these on the record. I've appreciated Verlina and the employment department working with me on these two bills in particular. House Bill 3353, which I gave you a copy of, creates an interim task force on health care personnel. involving several people. Part of the reason for this particular bill was the drivers, especially in my community and other communities across the state, and in the cost of insurance for employers and the affordability of insurance as it continues to ramp up. Part of that piece is a result of the fact that we don't have an adequate supply of healthcare workers, whether they be certified nurses assistants, whether they be LPNs, whether they be RNs, or whether they're physicians. The employment department, if you look at their statistics, show that there is throughout the state a need for healthcare workers. Within the employment department budget, they've set aside some money for some special projects. The director I've talked to just real briefly, and I kind of caught her flat-footed this morning, but I hope you looked at these. Did you get copies of these too? But the measure sets up with the various healthcare groups, so we can look at the issues not only regarding incentives, regarding how we can align our community college programs, which is part of the workforce training issues that come through this department. My understanding in talking to the director and looking at the budget is that they have some money set aside to look at some of these kinds of employment issues. I think this is an employment issue that spans from rural to urban Oregon and the need for healthcare professionals. And I wanted to just ask that be put in as part of the budget commentary. It doesn't need to be a budget note, but if we pass it within current budgets, that can be handled. So I wanted to put that on and make sure the director was okay with that. And the other piece in dealing with the employment department budget was House Bill 3444. And a lot of the child care pieces run through the employment department, and we've talked with the child care people. This House Bill 3444 is based upon Minnesota plan for child care. The Minnesota plan, what it does is, well, Minnesota provides about $1 million in daycare kinds of programs out of the state's general fund. What this program would do would be to allow infants up to a year old, instead of the money that we would normally pay for someone to go into daycare, mm-hmm. so that the parent would then go off to work and leave an infant child, it provides that they could take 75% of the money that they would normally get for the employment-related daycare, just with infants only, and it could go to the family, because we know that the brain research has shown, and all the research has shown, that first year is very critical for the bonding with the parents, for brain development, and for those types of issues. In addition, it would stretch our child care dollars, because it would allow that 25% to roll over so we could expand the base. Theoretically, we can expand the base, and that's what Minnesota's experience has been. And also, there's the need, and if you look at the statistics the department has or anyone else, that there's the need, that's the most critical need for daycare, is infant-related daycare. So consequently, that's why I put in this piece of legislation. It doesn't look like we're going to be able to get any general fund at this particular point, but in talking with the child care division within the department, they believe that they may be able to apply for a federal waiver for some of the new money that came in. And so consequently, I wanted to put that as part of the budget commentary, that they, if this bill goes forward, that they would then apply for the waiver for part of that money. So that's why I'd like to add those two things, if it's okay with the committee.
Senator, you is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad Representative Petridge has brought forward the serious shortage of nurses we heard in the Human Resources Subcommittee. Some hospitals have to delay surgery because of shortage of nurses, and we have asked the Nurse Association to come forward with some plan, but this will formalize the discussion and hear a recommendation.
Thank you, Senator. So we're going to try and move both of these bills, and they're both have hearings scheduled, so we're going to move those, but these were so budget-related, I didn't feel it was fair to the department to put in a budget note necessarily.
But what is the, if they can get the federal waiver, what is the match money? Or is it just that they can use?
They can use some of the federal funds to do that particular thing. And we've got an increase in the amount of money that was available for child care, so hopefully we can get that piece through.
Let me ask this, and I have no horse in this race, but is there a possibility that these families could work at some of the actual infant daycare facilities and thus create employment in that process? Because the employment within that process would certainly generate an opportunity. This is the very intensive area of child care, obviously. But if those folks could work at those facilities now.
We didn't contemplate that in the bill.
But that certainly could augment certainly a portion of that and create another resource within that. So, okay, with that, we're going to go ahead and close the work session on today's hearing on House Bill 5015 for the Employment Department. We are coming back to Senate 5510 tomorrow, and if we could get in as early as we possibly can and get some basic ground rules tomorrow morning. Or tomorrow. Yes, excellent. We've got ground rules that we would like to go ahead and work through.
I don't think we necessarily have to vote on them unless someone...
We'll just move it in as part of the commentary, budget commentary. With that, we'll close the that portion then of House Bill 5015.
When's work session on employment?
Wednesday.
Can't come back tomorrow.
Twenty-four hour notice.
The notification that we put out says that it can be carried over to the next day, but it has to be announced at this meeting with the people who were here for it.
No one is left other than members of the committee, so with that, we'll go ahead and carry House Bill 5015, the Employment Department, over to tomorrow. But I would like to do it in the second hour, if that's at all possible, so that we can be fair to the OECD folks and get started on that. Yes. Thank you very much.